What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're continuing on with our expectations series today. And today, two players that mean an awful lot to the Ravens 2022 season, Calais Campbell and Morgan Moses. As usual, two players who are not paired at a position group. Here to talk to me about these guys is Brad McGowan. Brad, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Looking forward to the discussion.
Tell folks, first of all, where they can talk football with you.
Sure. I'm on Twitter at MC Bradley. I think every time I'm on one of your podcasts, I mention that I don't tweet that often, but the more I appear on your podcast, I might have to start being a little more active.
All right. Well, very good. I'm glad you're getting some back and forth going on this. I know a lot of people have had positive things to say about this series. I can tell you only this. These are a lot of fun to record. So we're definitely getting analysts on who are very interested in the players that they chose, which is, I think, part of the thing. So appreciate you taking Campbell and Moses for us today. And let's jump right in if you're ready.
Sounds great.
All right. So Calais Campbell is back on a two-year deal for $12.5 million. It's an interesting deal because most deals are heavily backloaded. Even two-year deals we saw that was it could be a one-year deal for $10 million for Villanueva or a two-year deal for $16 million. And, of course, it ended up a one-year deal for $10 million. Well, Campbell's actually may turn out to be a one-year deal for $6 million. The second year, he actually gets paid $6.5 million of the $12.5 million. So an interesting kind of a deal. I think a good structure for the Ravens, frankly, in terms of how it's done, just in case he either decides to retire or drops off to where he's not meeting expectations.
Yeah, I was really happy to see him re-sign this offseason. In doing some of the analysis for this podcast, I was reminded that he was the Ravens' highest graded defensive player, according to PFF last year. And at this stage in his career, that's probably not what you want as a Ravens fan if we're going to be competing at the level that we hope. That being said, Campbell has really been an iron man his entire career, and has really had an astounding level of productivity all the way through. And what is he entering? He's going to be 36 this season,
15th season. So his first season was 2008. And you're right. He played 57.5% of the snaps in 21, even though he missed a couple games. He still hadn't played in 15 games. This is what I find to be incredible about Campbell. He's missed 12 games in a 14-year career.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. I was just kind of just perusing just his career, and he's really been one of the interior defensive players really for over a decade now. And he happened to play alongside of or opposite in the same era that J.J. Watt was just a phenomenal interior defensive player early in his career, and now Aaron Donald. And those two players have really overshadowed Campbell for his career, but he has really had a remarkable career and been a pretty incredible player in his own right.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, with your regard to your original point about he still was the highest graded player for the Ravens defenses last season. I mean, that definitely is the eye test entirely. I do a portion of my article every week is devoted to star treatment, where I literally list out the plays where we took a note for some exceptional activity by a player. And Campbell, if I didn't really want to mix it up a little bit and have some different players, if I didn't want to be boring, you know, he'd be one of the three pretty much every week. He's just an absolute dominant player who turns in, you know, 6+ outstanding plays per game. And sometimes it's 14, you know, he shows up play after play, either doing something personally, sometimes in the blowing up a run play where he doesn't get a tackle credit, other times just helping somebody else, making the play by his own action in terms of getting some leverage and allowing somebody to slip through behind him. Just an incredible defensive player. It does not really show up in the statistics directly, and certainly not in a 1.5 sack year.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, his grading probably was impacted by the fact that, unfortunately, Baltimore was just not up to our standards defensively last season. Ton of injuries in the secondary, struggled a lot with the middle linebacker play from time to time. I know that has been much discussed on this pod channel. But he really was the most consistent defensive player that they had game in and game out. He just brought it every day, or every game rather. And it's really good to see him back. I think, you know, when you think about what this season will bring, new defensive coordinator Mike McDonald. I know you guys have discussed that at length on this podcast, so we don't have to belabor that. But the Ravens did a lot in the offseason to restock the cupboard a bit, drafted along the defensive line with Travis Jones coming in as a rookie, brought in our old friend Brent Urban to restock the defensive interior as well, re-signed Michael Pierce, who had a phenomenal couple of years for Baltimore when he was here, starting in his rookie season until he left for the Vikings. And then we got a bunch of guys coming back from injury. So ideally this season, we're going to have a lot more talent defensively that they can deploy and be a lot more multiple, which means hopefully that Campbell won't be called on to be the same, the same level of play in, play out, setting the tone for the defense. And hopefully, as other players rise up, he can kind of settle into a role that allows him to thrive and make some more splash plays. That's really kind of my hope.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you know, his last 5 years before coming to Baltimore, he's been in Baltimore 2 years already, but the last five, he played between 77 and 80% of snaps every single year, which is, first of all, incredibly consistent and an amazingly high number in terms of, if you look at all the Ravens who've ever played 70% of the snaps, it's a very short list. It's dominated by Haloti Ngata, who did it four times, but it's a very short list of total players. And then, you know, he wasn't just there. He was up at 77 to 80%. Baltimore's system is rotational. They really value trying to keep players fresh, really always have. And I think he'll see even less activity this year. I would expect him to play maybe 50% of the snaps when healthy this year.
Yeah, I think that would be ideal. I think if they have either one of Urban, or if somehow Wolf comes back and can contribute in a meaningful way, paired with Pierce, plus a couple of the young guys, hopefully Matabike and Washington take a step forward this year. I know that you've talked about them at length in this pod. And then with the rookie, hopefully Campbell will be able to, you know, really, in an optimal scenario, I would love to see him playing primarily just the high leverage downs, yeah, third downs, being able to pass rush. It'll be interesting to see what McDonald's approach is. It sounds like in some of the interviews that he has given prior to the season and the offseason, they've talked about blitzing possibly a little bit less, which will possibly allow them to rush for four. And I know something you've talked about with the four-man rush, it gives the opportunity to stunt more. And Campbell is excellent at that, whether going underneath or over top. So, you know, hopefully, ideally, he would be able to slot into that role and be one of the interior pass rushers in high leverage downs.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think I like what Urban brings to the team as a run defender in particular. So a lot of the things that you needed to have Campbell on the field for the last 2 years, you can take some of that responsibility off his lap. Urban, a very versatile 3-5 player. You know, that's one of the things that's really good about him, and he'll be able to either line up next to Pierce in some nickel situations where they really need to stop the run, or he'll be able to line up as the five tech when they have three linemen out there. I think we'll see a lot of that, by the way, with Travis Jones and Pierce on the field at the same time. So I'm expecting Travis Jones to get to play a lot of three this year. Michael Pierce probably stay at the one would be my guess as to how that plays out. But if you're playing a lot of rundowns like that, you really have the opportunity with the current defensive lineman to have some time off for Campbell. I think I would also see Matabike moving into more of a more focused on passing downs. And I'm not saying it's all going to be like third down he's in there for, but maybe you see Matabike more on second and eight plus, and then third down kind of thing. So it kind of limits his snap. Now he'll start some series too. Don't get me wrong on that. He's going to be out there, and they're just going to rotate the entire line by series enough that they'll do that. But I think there'll be there will be times where they're going to want to get Matabike to play not as many first down snaps, since I think he's not as stout a run defender as the other options they have.
So when you talk about having having Pierce and having possibly Urban, mm-hmm, to stuff the run in early downs, and really manning more of the interior role in Matabike and passing downs. I was wondering what your thoughts were early in the season, if we might see Campbell lining up on the outside in pass rush situations, given that right now we have a dearth of available bodies with folks coming back from injury at outside linebacker. I recall seeing Campbell from time to time lining up in that traditional defensive end style role in a four-man rush. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, if they're showing a four-man front, no problem. If it's a, you know, a 3-4 alignment where they have two outside linebackers, then that makes it more difficult to fit in Campbell on the end. Yeah, I'm not saying it can't be done. You can stand up Bowser or whatever, but they can do a lot of things in the name of trying to cover for not having good rush players. But I think they're going to have to re-sign Justin Houston. They'll have Adafi Owe, hopefully, you know, healthy and ready to go by the time the season starts. Ferguson will be available if they need him to be on the outside. If you're talking about replacing Campbell with Ferguson for some downs, sorry, other way around, replacing Ferguson with Campbell for some downs, I don't think that's too much of a loss. You know, that certainly would be a possibility. You're not getting a coverage guy really in either case there. It would be possible,
yeah,
to do that. If Campbell does line up on the edge, it really has to be at the rush edge. So your Sam guy is still lining up opposite that tight end who's in line.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've recalled him in the past lining up out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's certainly a possibility, but, yeah, I mean, I'm really happy he's back. If you want, we can get into a good versus great.
Well, why don't we talk about a few goals? Because I don't want to go to good versus great and jump to thing. But I've got a few things I want to see from him.
Absolutely.
I want to see him contribute to the interior push on obvious passing downs. And it doesn't, he doesn't have to generate the sacks personally. In fact, he could, if he had the same season he had last year, you know, I'm put me down for that right now, because he was outstanding. And that was only a 1.5 sack year. He's got a lot of ways in which he can contribute to effective pass rush by pushing the pocket, you know, getting somebody in that quarterback's cone early enough in the play with a good rush, particularly when he's alone on a guard who's not not the top guard in the league. He's going to have a good opportunity to do that. And, you know, we've seen him succeed in that and get somebody in the pocket quickly, which can create a broken play. I want to see him provide 3-5 versatility. I want him to be able to play both positions, maybe even effectively the nose on some passing downs.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, the other thing that I would love to see is that he just continues to be a leader, a vocal presence, a guy that, I mean, the Ravens need a bunch of these young guys to step up. And Campbell, I mean, he's a Walter Payton Award winner, a classy guy. Known throughout the league as one of the classy veterans, and just having him continue in that role and that mentoring role. I know it's not his job to coach up the other players, but just being that presence day in and day out, I think is to see some of these other guys step up and start to produce. I think that's something I would put on his, if they were able to be successful, I would give him credit for that. So that's something I'd love to see too.
Yeah, I mean, for starters, he's not one-for-one threatened by anybody like some quarterbacks are. You can't really expect a quarterback to mentor somebody he's directly competing with. And oftentimes, right. You know, those quarterbacks will get up at the podium and say, you know, screw that. You know, that's right. Not my job.
Ryan Tannehill looking at you.
Yeah, in Campbell's case, you know, he's here for one or two more years. I think if the Ravens were to win it all this year, I think he might hang it up. He certainly will probably take two shots at it if everything works out. The contract is certainly structured to incent him pretty heavily to play that second year if he plays well this year. So, I think that there's a good chance that he's around for both these years. And given the very limited horizon, all the incentive is on him to be a teacher/mentor. And I think we've seen that in some of the camp videos they've shown of him, you know, working with players like Matt Ibike last year.
Yeah. Yeah. And I meant to mention this at the beginning when we were speaking about him, but historically in Ravens history, the acquisition of Campbell reminds me a little bit when the Ravens went out and got Anquan Boldin. Boldin was a little bit earlier in his career, but he was still a really established veteran, really solid player. They made a trade for him in the same way they did for Campbell. They didn't give up very much in the way of assets to get Campbell and to get Boldin back. And both of those guys came in and with Boldin, he was here 3 years and they won that Super Bowl in the third year. And this is going to be Campbell's third year. And we're thinking high and lofty goal, winning the Super Bowl. It's fantastic. The Boldin acquisition was one of my favorite in Ravens history, where they went out and got a guy that wasn't the top of the market, but really made a difference. And Calais has been that kind of player through the first 2 years. And I just love to see it continue in that same vein.
Yeah, Rod Woodson, a similar pickup, not a trade, but a late career acquisition who really worked out. They've had other late career acquisitions that have not worked out.
Right, sure.
I think my guess is they probably thought they were getting a leader with Earl Thomas. That turned out to be very far from the truth.
Yeah.
You can get fooled on this. Let me go back to Campbell a little bit in terms of goals for this next year. I do think he'll be rotated more frequently, which we talked about already. So I don't think we need to go on that again. Maintain outstanding run defense is important. He's not going to be in there. I think there might be less rundowns total against the Ravens this year, just because I'm hoping they'll be ahead in games. And, you know, with a healthier squad, we'll be more likely to force opponents into more passing. That being the case, or if that is the case, Campbell won't have as many opportunities to show off his good run defense, but he'll have some still. And then most importantly, I want a guy who maintains his effectiveness on a snap by snap basis overall with fewer snaps. Is fine. So if I have an aging player, I'm expecting some form of decline. I can either take the same number of snaps at a lower level, or I can take fewer snaps at the same level. Give me that one. Give me the fewer snaps at the same level we had before. I think that would be my preference with a player like Campbell, and the one that frankly has a better chance to work out.
And I think if in that scenario, hopefully that also means that we're playing him fewer snaps because some of the other guys are stepping up.
Yeah.
And that's going to be important.
Yeah, going to be interesting because, you know, you mentioned Broderick Washington's name as well, but these guys can't all be active on game day. And it'll be interesting to see if they regularly dress five, in which case you'd think Pierce, Jones, possibly Urban, Campbell, and Matabike. And then Washington might be left out, or there might be weeks where they leave Urban out. And they think they've got, but there's going to be other weeks where the Ravens have kept five on the roster typically and dressed only four fairly frequently. So, you know, I don't think that's been particularly successful for the Ravens the last few years with the injuries and some of the players they've had who haven't been really ready to play a lot of snaps, but then have been called upon because of the situation in games. Like, for instance, Ellis was asked to play way too many snaps. Not a bad player, you know, decent nose tackle, but not a guy you want to have him play 53% of the snaps or something. It's just not ideal. So if they're going to rotate appropriately week to week, I think they're probably going to have five dressed and have six on the roster would be my guess for the defensive line.
And much of that's probably going to be impacted by how many special teams only players are they dressing week in and week out. And you've talked this year about how we have fewer of those guys that are only going to make an impact on special teams. So perhaps they aren't, you know, an Anthony Levine type isn't taking up a roster spot that it would allow them to dress an additional player.
Yeah, Jordan Richards. They certainly have had plenty of those guys in the past. Sometimes you observe that's the actual usage of the guy, but that's not what I'm talking about. I don't think that's what you are either in terms of this. I'm talking about guys who could contribute on defense if called upon. So Tony Jefferson,
correct?
He might not get called upon. Geno Stone might not get called upon to play safety very often, but he's available. And if they have the need to play four safety packages, they've got it covered. And if a safety goes down and they still want to have four safety packages, they got it covered.
Right. Right. Yeah. I was talking primarily about players that play special teams that you wouldn't trust to be on the field in a defensive situation.
Yep.
In this case, you're probably going to trust a lot more of those guys on the field. So it's going to give you a little more flexibility.
There you go. All right. Well, I understand you have a good and a great ready to go. So tell me what's a good season for Calais Campbell this year.
Yeah. So for Campbell, you know, for good, I put, or my thought process was that he maintains this level of performance. He is the rock in the center of that defensive line, defensive interior. And then his steady play, similar to last year, allows some of these younger guys to start to blossom in, you know, more, I don't want to say niche roles, but in, you know, in scenarios that are really aligned to their skill sets. For example, Matabike on third downs. So that's the good for me.
I love that last part because that's kind of the additional part you have. But if I was rewriting mine, I'd do that. I just said stays relatively healthy and contributes to both run and pass defense, leads the defensive line in snaps. I think if all three of those things happen, in fact, I think leads the defensive line in snaps really means you can cross out the stays relatively healthy because it'll mean that.
You know? Right.
But I agree with your other point. If he can allow others to succeed in some roles, that would really be the icing on a good year.
Right.
And it does not depend on big personal statistics. In fact, most of these things, I've tried to stay qualitative with players as we go through this. And I noticed you doing the same thing.
Yeah. Although I will say I did get quantitative on the great side.
Let's hear it.
So great. You know, going qualitative first, for me, a great season for Campbell would be that Pierce, Jones, and Washington, you know, maybe Urban or whomever, those guys can handle the early down run stuffing downs, and the Ravens can maintain a high level of run defense with those guys on the field, and they don't have to rely on Campbell. And then they can put Campbell in high leverage situations, partnering with Matt Ibike or with Jones or whomever to really wreak havoc in high leverage situations. And he's able to influence the passing game a lot more. That's, to me, a great season, because that means that the young guys are evolving to a way where they can be trustworthy down in and down out, and Campbell can just get after the quarterback. And to go quantitative, I think his first season, there was a Wired episode where he was telling Brandon Williams or one of the other defensive players that he wanted to get 100 sacks in his career and retire. And he's 6.5 short. He has 93 and a half. And if you look back on his stats throughout his career, his first two seasons, he didn't have 6.5 sacks. But then outside of that, there was one season prior to him coming to the Ravens where he had fewer than 6.5. And it's only been with Baltimore that that total has dipped. So I'd really love to see him, you know, go out with a bang and get those 100 sacks. And
that would be great. Would you be okay with him getting him over 2 years?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. I love him. Keep him around. And for the money that Aaron Donald just signed, we're paying Campbell. What is it?
Great price.
Yeah, absolutely great price.
Yeah.
Now, granted, Aaron Donald is a one of one, but Campbell is an exceptional player to have on your team.
You pay for that tail of the ability curve, that's for sure.
Right.
I had a little bit different on the great. I said provides a little more as a pass rusher in a more specialized role. So you had some of that. 1.5 sacks in 2020, one of the lowest since his rookie year. So I'd like him to finish a little more this year. I think they're, because of the way the coverage should be this year, I think he should have some opportunities to finish that are more than what he's had. I can't really say that the pass rush around him is any better. In fact, it might be less. We'll see how, you know, without Bowser, who was the leading sack guy last year, are Owe and Houston able to provide enough pressure? That three-man group was pretty effective in terms of getting pressure until things started to really go south late in the year. But continuing with Campbell, I want him to get his hands up for some big passes defensed. I think this is a defense behind him, particularly on high leverage downs, as you mentioned, can take advantage of that. I want to play the run effectively and continue. I don't think there's any real doubt that if he's healthy, he'll do that. And I want him to continue to defy time with his impact play after play. That you know, he doesn't look like a 36-year-old out there all of a sudden. One of the things Bill James used to say is the only surprise you get from a player over 30 is a bad one. And I think that's largely true in football in particular. In baseball, the prime age is a little bit later than what it is for football. Football is pretty damn young. So yeah. A lot of your bad surprises are silver plattered to you by your older, highly paid players. And hopefully we don't get one of those from Campbell. And I think if he's on the field, I'd be very surprised if he does not continue to deliver a very high level of quality play.
I agree with that. And speaking of your note about the batted passes, it will be interesting if they put him next to Urban in any of these passing situations, because Urban was great at batting those passes out. Yeah. I mean, both those guys are huge gentlemen. So it'd be tough finding passing lanes with those two guys in the middle.
Yeah, we talked about, we just did the Brett Urban expectations today, so it'll probably be out the day before this one goes. So look back if you haven't listened to it already. But there's Brett Urban getting high and tipping a couple of balls. This is about all I expect of him as a pass rusher. A little bit of contributory pressure, but hopefully he'll be that run defender that allows Campbell to take some snaps off and maybe a game off if necessary. So if Campbell's hurt, you know, you have Urban in there. He's not as good, but he'll give you some of what Campbell can give you if you need it that way. And also, he'll give you some of what Wolf would give you, because I think only one of those two will make the team. Only Urban and Wolf, only one will make the team. As of right now, based on obviously the injuries that we're aware of, where Urban is in terms of being at OTAs and Wolf is not here, I would guess it's probably going to be Urban. But I can't say that for sure.
Yeah, I don't wish to speculate on that. I have no insight.
Right.
But I think you're right about one of them making the team.
Yeah. All right, we ready to move on to Morgan Moses?
Absolutely.
All right. Signed for 3 seasons for $15 million. And his contract also, a very well-crafted veteran contract, which is not heavily loaded towards the back end. So he can, meaning, and by that, I mean not heavily bonusified. So you can't really afford to cut him in the second year. His contract could be 1 year for $5.5 million. It could be 2 years for $9.5 million, or it could be 3 years for $15 million. Very good structure for a player his age. You know, he's past 31. He certainly is a player you have to be concerned about when that drop off will occur. He has played every game for 7 consecutive seasons and at least 91% of snaps all those years.
Absolutely. And when you had mentioned that you had some of these shows that you wanted to do, and Campbell and Moses was the pairing of the two individuals, one of the things that I was really drawn to is that in my mind for the Ravens, both of these players are veteran players. And I think both of them, the goal or an ideal season is probably similar. You know, we don't want to be in a situation where they are our only hope, either on the offensive line or on the defensive line. But they're very quality veterans that bring a lot to the table. And for really reasonable contracts. When I was doing my research on Moses, I was actually surprised by how well he graded PFF year over year. It was a lot better than I anticipated, given that I think, you know, some of the dialogue around him coming to Baltimore is it's an insurance. If Stanley can't go, it's a little bit of insurance on the right side. If they don't want to put McCary there, if Juwan James doesn't come back, although James is probably more of a pipe dream that he comes back and contributes, or, you know, if they weren't able to draft a rookie who could come in and play right away. And Fa'alele, while has a lot of potential, is probably not the guy that you're going to want to rely on day one. And so Moses was seen a little bit as a, you know, a bridge to that next, you know, that next right tackle of, you know, that the Ravens could rely on for a long time to come. But in doing some of the digging, he's really had a pretty solid career. As you said, he's been durable. And as far as the PFF grading goes, he's been really consistent. And last year he had a pretty down year by PFF standards, but he was, I believe there was only one Ravens lineman that graded out better than him. Actually two, Zeitler and Bozeman graded out better than he did last year, but it was all comparable as far as the grading goes. And so I was pretty excited to see how well he's performed. And so you're the offensive line guru. So I'll defer to you as far as the tape and what you think we're going to get out of him from that standpoint.
Right. He's an interesting player because he should gain from the system. But let me drop a couple background points before I kind of project that. He's only played parts of 5 career games at left tackle. And I'm talking about games where he had more than one snap, which I think was probably unbalanced line snap where he's listed at left tackle and they might have 3 tackles on that side. You know, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, where he played 20 plus snaps or even 5 plus snaps, frankly. He's only had 5 games in his whole career, 2 in 2014 and 3 more in 2020. So I don't think it's likely he's the answer at left tackle, although he might be the guy they have to rely on. He's a pretty average pass blocker, definitely does not have great feet. It's difficult for me to say because I've only seen Fa'alele against college competition, but I'd actually be more excited if they decided Fa'alele was their guy on the left side if something happened. McCary actually, as a pass blocker by PFF, outperformed him last year. And I didn't score Moses' play by my system. I will say McCary probably grades a little bit better by PFF than he does by me. He's in the 70s by PFF as a pass blocker. His overall grade was, you know, roughly a C+ in that range. Probably not quite at that level. Be more like I would think in the low 60s to mid 60s if I were to make a PFF equivalent grade out of what I'm, you know, what I'm doing. One of the things about McCary and frankly, even more so Villanueva, is they gave up a lot of pressure between 2.5 and 3 seconds. So they were letting the cone get invaded late. And it's not, I mean, and don't get me wrong, the Ravens should be eternally grateful to what they got from Patrick McCary last year. And obviously they feel like it had value because they gave him a big contract. I still hope he plays every remaining game of his career on the interior of the Ravens line somewhere. And that's just a strict statement of, I think you can do better at tackle. And if the Ravens do better at tackle for every year he remains here, that's a good thing. So I we'll see how it breaks down. I think McCary will be in bubble wrap to start the season, or at least there's a pretty good chance of that, because I think they're looking to make a one-for-one switch. And if you have McCary on the bench, he can jump in at, well, certainly three positions, anywhere on the inside, but he can also jump in probably at right tackle and be your next guy up if you don't really think Faalele's ready. If Moses goes down at left tackle, he's not going to jump in one for one, but he'll jump in with a switch of some sort. So somebody will be moving to left tackle, and then McCary would probably be the guy to jump in at right tackle. But in any case, the Ravens are going to have to make two changes if Stanley gets hurt.
Stanley is certainly the long pole in the tent for the offensive line.
Yep.
When I think about evaluating or projecting out the hope for Moses, it's really tied into what the offensive line and the offense does as a whole. And the gold standard is going to be that 2019 offense. And in that offense, the line was dominant. Stanley played every year. I think I was looking at his PFF grade, and it was he and Yanda had phenomenal grades that year.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a great offense. And if he can come back even remotely close to what he was, that's going to give the Ravens so much more flexibility. Because as I was prepping for this, I was really excited about, again, you know, how well Moses graded out just in general, and felt that he's going to be a great addition to the offensive line. But if Stanley can't go at left tackle, while they have a lot of bodies that fit maybe the shape of what you want, they don't have any of those guys with experience. Now, I did look at the PFF grading of Moses in the games that he played left tackle in 2020, and he graded out pretty well. So it wasn't like he was falling off a cliff. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know who would play over there if Stanley's not healthy.
Right. Well, it will. I hope we do not see. Let's put it
that way. Absolutely.
Let's go back to Moses here and talk about some goals for this year, because the first and biggest to me is adapting to the Ravens system. Now, if you go back to 2019, the Ravens ran a lot of these plays where they allowed the right edge to rush unblocked. That means a down block from Orlando Brown that year, and then a nice, easy half-level move up to level two to kind of seal that edge from a scraping player. Created all sorts of opportunities for Jackson. Brown obviously had a very good year, but went to the Pro Bowl. I think Moses could adapt to that, and this could be a better situation for him even than some of his past things. He has enough mobility to certainly get up half a level. He probably has enough mobility to get up into level two and make some blocks and not have to be completely lungy to do so.
Absolutely. And I think when you think about the Ravens scheme, a lot of it is predicated on that power run game to the right. Mm-hmm. So who plays left guard is going to contribute if they can pull in the same way that, you know, in the 2019 season. I think you've famously talked about how many times Bozeman pulled game in and game out. So if they can get, you know, someone that can replicate that to some degree, and there's a lot of options at left guard. You guys have talked about it at length, but assuming that, that power run game to that side remains, then, you know, hopefully Moses will slot right in doing the Orlando Brown work.
Yeah, he's you know, he'll have a couple jobs over there. Sometimes the guard pulls and you want to get him through the hole. That's oftentimes the best situation for your guard, in which case he's usually going to have to make a good kickout block. And that's an in-space block, which is going to be more challenging for him than a lot of other things on an end. If he's blocking down and moving up to seal, then it'll often be that guard has to make an outside block in space to get somebody kicked out. So the running back is a level two or level three first contact opportunity. Mm-hmm. I hope I hope we'll see him be able to succeed in either of those methods, whether it's effective ceiling when he down blocks or whether it's pushing guys out in space and maintaining those blocks. I don't have a ton to go on, but I am hopeful that I'll work from him. The other thing I really like about what Morgan Moses is coming to in terms of the situation is he's a quality player on each side of him. So that's something we can't say about Stanley, for example. We don't know what he's got in terms of a left guard playing next to him. Or even Linderbaum, you know, because we don't know the left guard situation, we don't know if that left A-gap is going to be bombed by stun after blitz, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
So you got problems there. But at least Moses's initial position at right tackle between Zeitler and Boyle is a good place to start if those guys remain healthy.
Absolutely. And the other thing that should help the entire line is getting their running backs back this year. Just having explosiveness in the backfield next to Lamar is going to help lift the whole offensive line as a whole tremendously.
I completely agree. And that the Ravens have got to threaten all parts of the defense horizontally along the line of scrimmage. It's the basic need. And I know in 2019, they talked about, Lamar's not throwing outside the numbers and not doing this and that. But it wasn't even really necessary to do that. I mean, they had one of the most efficient offenses of all time because they could threaten left, right, and center along that line of scrimmage, and they did a great job of it. I think, you know, they need to get all the handoffs working well, all the running backs working effectively with the mesh point is one of the real keys for the Ravens to make that work again. But they'll do a lot of other things, and Moses will be part of this because they run counter a lot. And that means he's going to be pulling something he's probably not very familiar with, but something the Ravens will ask him to do as the second man behind either the center or the right guard in terms of pulling left. There'll probably be times where he pulls right as well in terms of looping outside a tight end who's taking a block. So he's going to do more pulling than he ever has before in his career. I'd be fairly sure of that.
Absolutely.
All right. At 31, I'll just say, I'll ask the question. Would you say it's probably unreasonable at this point, despite the fact he's been an Ironman, despite the fact he's played pretty well, you know, pretty consistently for his career, that a step forward either in terms of technical improvement or productivity in an area would be unrealistic?
I don't think it's unrealistic. When we brought in Zeitler last year, he was the same age last year as Moses is now. So they came in under similar situations. Thinking back to Moses's career, I mean, he played primarily in Washington for a number of years in a franchise that wasn't known for a lot of success during those times. Then he played most recently for the Jets. Now he's coming to Baltimore, where we've been known with the scheme that we run with the Roman system that we can develop some offensive linemen. So I don't think I am expecting that he's going to take a huge leap forward in productivity, but I wouldn't say it's out of the question. Certainly 31 is old by football player standards, but the Rams won the Super Bowl with Andrew Whitworth as a left tackle at 40, and he just retired and he was exceptional down the stretch. Now, obviously he's an outlier, but to your point earlier, Moses has been an Ironman. I wouldn't put past him to improve.
Okay. So I think we might be saying the same things. I think any improvement in Moses is going to become because the scheme is a better fit. The players are a better fit for around him. I don't think it's going to be an improvement of Moses himself. I think he's largely going to be the same guy. Even Zeitler, I mean, Zeitler had a terrific year for the Ravens last year, just an unknown terrific year. And, you know, he was basically no different than he'd been his whole career. That's basically what you got. And he did
all of that without any running backs and with a lot of mayhem going on around him.
Yep. Weak right tackle situation for much of the year with guys they had over there, and weak. Anyway, it was what he was. It wasn't an ideal situation for him. Obviously, I agree. Yeah. Okay. So you want to start off with what you think is a good year?
Sure. So, good, and this might be bordering on great given some of the comments you made earlier, but my good was that he comes in and locks up one of the tackle roles. I think that's primarily the right tackle role, but you know, if for some reason he's the first choice at left tackle and Stanley can't go, that he comes in and locks that up, and that he's able to lock down that role in a way that they can run their offense without having to scheme extra help for him play in and play out. And that was something that was a major problem last year, is trying to leave tight ends in to make up for some of the deficiencies at the tackle spot. If he's able to mitigate some of that, it's going to allow them to be a lot more flexible in their personnel packages. It's going to allow them to be a lot more flexible in what they're asking their receivers to do, and you know, give them a lot more optionality. So to me, that would be a really good year if he's able to lock that up and not need a ton of extra help.
Okay, that would be fantastic. And I love the way you described that. That's really good. Mine isn't nearly as good, but I'd just say delivers quality run blocking. And I want that to be a significant part of rejuvenating the Ravens run game to somewhere between the 19 and 20 level. It doesn't have to be all the way to 19. That's so unrealistic. You know, it's like people talking about how this defense could be better than the 2000 defense year after year after year. It's never going to happen, folks. There will never be another one that's that good in our lifetime. At least I would anticipate not seeing that. I would like the offense to get back to about 87 or 88% of what it was in terms of one particular metric, and that's points per drive. So if you take 88% of the 3.08 points per drive they have. Yeah, that's good. 2.71 points per drive. That would put them in about the top five of the entire NFL. And with the defense structured the way they are, if they can get some leads, they should be able to really lean on some opponents. If they can just generally, you know, pump out points at that level. So I'd be very excited if they could get back to, you know, 88% of what they were in 2019.
Absolutely.
I think my other part was provides adequate pass blocking. That's all.
Fair enough.
I actually like the way you had yours much better. How about great? What's your great?
Well, so great was for me if they determine in the preseason, if first of all, Stanley is healthy in the great scenario, and in the preseason they determine that someone else wins the right tackle job outright, whether that's Fa'alele, whether they feel McCary wins the job, whomever. Again, someone that's going to man that role and not need a lot of extra help from the tight end. And then Moses can be put in bubble wrap and be a durable backup. Hmm. And to me, that would be great. I'm really excited that Moses signed and took the deal that he did, given the player that he is. And I think he's really excited to be here. And if they didn't have to use him, that would be amazing.
It's certainly a sunk cost at the very end. I do think he's probably one of the Ravens' two best tackles right now.
I think that's likely too, but yeah. You know, I was thinking pipe dream Fa'alele comes in and he's like Orlando Brown Jr., but only bigger.
Yeah.
And somehow wins the role, and then, you know, Moses is just in bubble wrap in case someone gets hurt.
You're absolutely right. And by the way, we're recording this on June 6th. A lot of the shows where we talk about exactly this prospect coming up haven't aired yet. But so I just want to point out that this Brad is coming up with an original thought. He's not stealing something from another show. But this is that would be, to me, a wonderful solution to this would be that Fa'alele ends up just being a much better player than they had projected. It shows through camp, through practice, through everything. And through whatever means he gets, you know, sticks his enormous foot through the crack in the door when it comes and never gives up the position.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Now, even Brown had to wait his turn and didn't start day one. Our old friend James Hurst, man, that right tackle side, he's getting a lot of help. And with all due respect to James, I was happy to see OBJ get that job.
And that was exactly the case of what you mentioned on the good thing, was a guy that they really had to scheme for. And fortunately, they had Marshall Yanda there. And Marshall Yanda is one of the great bailout artists of all time in terms of processing inside out and making that block. It's something that Cleveland has. Nobody has it to the degree Yanda has it.
Sure.
But Cleveland is a big guy with that trait, which should really go well. So, I agree with you. I I didn't think there was any chance that that would happen, by the way. I was a stone cold, no doubt about it, you know, 75% chance Orlando Brown's the starter on day one. The only way he's not is injury. You know, there's no way that's not happening. And yeah, I was on air saying it. I was, you know, on the show saying it. And Harbaugh just really favors veteran players over rookies.
Well, there's been a couple. I wrote down in some of my notes, there's been a couple times in the recent past as I've been listening to your podcast and you going into depth about how the offensive line performs and has scored and kind of projecting out what the lineups will be. There's been a couple times when the Ravens have made choices that seemed very surprising. In 2019, again, in addition to James Hurst starting, oh no, he started 2018. He started 2018 and Orlando Brown came in 2018 and then was the starter in 2019. But going into the 2019 season, they had a hole at left guard. And I think Ben Powers was a rookie that season. And we thought he looked great in the preseason. And they went ahead and went with Bozeman, who was considered very slow footed coming out of college. And he really excelled to the degree that we really couldn't project. And so that was the time that they picked the guy that out of nowhere we didn't expect, and he flourished. And then last season they went with Tyree Phillips at left guard, which
that's right,
you know, was seemed pretty surprising given that when Powers had played, he was pretty good, and they had also were expecting Cleveland to come back. And as you've chronicled on this, Powers was, or Phillips was, one of their few backup tackles that could actually play tackle. And they put him in there and he gets hurt in the first game against the Raiders. And then, you know, they're sort of out to dry for tackles.
There's a word that sometimes comes up in financial circles when a series of unfortunate events occur, and they call it a perfect storm. Mm-hmm. And the regularity of perfect storms would tell you, first of all, they're not one in 200 events, which is a normal kind of a standard for actuaries messing up.
Yeah.
About one in 200 years. They happen so frequently. In that case, that wasn't a perfect storm at all. That was just poor planning. And it turned out Phillips wasn't the right guy at tackle either, because he got a chance to play in the second half of the season and didn't play very well in some rotational opportunities there. But when he was at left guard and getting hurt in game one, and Stanley, you know, not being able to play or not being able to come back as they thought, I mean, you got to be able to see ahead on that kind of thing. If he's your only backup tackle, you can't have him out there. You can't claim, oh my God, how could I possibly have predicted that? Well, you could have predicted it because,
Well, to bring it back to Moses, you know, some of, I think the circumstances that transpired last year, really convinced them they needed to go out and make the move that they did and bring in a guy like Moses. And, you know, looking at it on paper, it looks like a really smart move. And I think he's going to provide a lot of value for the team.
Yep. All right. So you did good and you did great. I don't think I said great again. You went through your great though, right?
Oh, I did. Okay. I apologize that we're just moving into yours.
I just said stays healthy yet again. And his game improves with quality line mates and scheme. So I don't think there's anything about him that's going to change. I think it'll be, you know, basically he's better within the Ravens scheme and playing next to Zeitler and Boyle. He could be better. The Ravens have a big season offensively, and Moses is an offensive lineman we take for granted, like Zeitler or Bozeman last year were. A lot of things are happening to your offensive line. A lot of things are not working about your offense in general. You got problems, but you don't even think of Moses because, you know, he's just a given. And that would be ideal.
Well, I hope in your scenario we take him for granted and there also aren't a lot of other problems in the offense that's humming in.
Yeah, let's go with that. You always have at least one. I mean, boy, sure. The wide receiver people come out of the woodwork, even in a year like 2019, to talk about how the Ravens can't possibly win by doing this, or you know, and then it's, you can't win in the playoffs. Then, you know, then we're talking sample size and all the other things that go with that. I mean, just, I don't know how to react to it because, you know, if you weren't happy with the efficiency of that offense in 2019, you will literally never be happy with the offense of your football team. Not if you're looking at it realistically, because there'll never be another better one, maybe in the history of the NFL on a per dollar of relative cap spent basis.
Ken, as a Ravens fan my whole life, or rather the whole time that they have been a franchise, that was the most fun I had ever had in season as a Ravens fan. I had never rooted for the team that was just constantly blowing people out because the offense couldn't be stopped. It was like Christmas morning every Sunday. I was so not used to it.
You know what I want to hear? I want to hear from people out there. And if you're listening to this episode, toss it out there on Twitter for the general thing, for the general group to respond to. But did you appreciate the 2019 Ravens offensive dominance more or less than the 2000 Ravens dominant defense? Because my God, that was so much fun. You almost find yourself rooting for punts or maybe not rooting for punts, but saying, hey, you know, it's okay to just get two first downs and punt from the 45-yard line because the defense will make something happen. And you know, anytime you have the lead, you're just leaning on the opponent in a way that makes them look like a bunch of 10th graders trying to play varsity football. It's just it's just funny.
I'll answer that quickly. I was pretty young. I was in college when they had the 2000 defense, and I do recall the angst of how many games in a row did they go without scoring a touchdown?
20 quarters, yeah.
Yeah, 20 quarters in a row. So there was some angst there. So probably in the moment, I didn't enjoy that as much as having the 14-2 team with the unstoppable offense. But the season I will put up there that rivaled the 2019 season was the 06 season,
yeah,
when their defense was phenomenal and they were just scoring defensive touchdown after defensive touchdown, and Ed Reed was just running amok back there. That was really exciting.
Yeah, that was a terrific year. So outstanding. So much fun to talk football. And always we get into these tangential things that I just love talking about anyway. But Brad, really appreciate having you on. Tell folks again where they can talk football with you.
At Twitter, I'm MC Bradley. And I realize part of the reason that I don't tweet as much is because of the character limit. And I always want to make so many different points and go on these tangents. And Twitter is not really the avenue for that.
It really is not. You know, this is a funny another story, but Twitter, you know, went from 140 to 280 characters. What, how many years ago? But it used to be you had a much shorter time. You had to squeeze all your link and your thought and everything into it. Just I know a lot of people like to tweet really short. They like to keep it pithy. I have a very hard time doing it too. So you're not alone.
Oh, there's just so much nuance in these discussions. It's never one way or the other. If Calvin Austin is available in the fourth round, you take him. You fill the wide receiver room with another speedy fast guy. Instead, he's not there. And so you take Will Likely, and all of a sudden, just maybe you change what you do. Maybe you throw it over the middle to a bunch of big bodies, and Lamar is running around back there repeating 2019.
And now the end of that tweet is 4 of 4. You know, get all that information
exactly
in there.
Exactly.
I feel your pain, my friend. If you're out there and you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up with a DM on Twitter. That's they're always open. I'll get back to you very quickly. Had a lot of people do this so far this summer, so we had a lot of fun. I want to get as many people on as possible before camp starts, and we'll have regular new shows that talk about what's going on at camp for about 17, 18 days, however long we're allowed to be there. And that'll be a lot of fun. And then we start to get into our regular season content, which is packed pretty much week after week. So if you'd like to be on a show, this is the time. Hit me up with a nice narrow topic. We'll get you on very quickly. Brad, thanks again for joining us. Always a pleasure to talk football with you.
As always, Ken, appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.